Tax Resolution Ninja Show, where we feature the top experts on all things tax to help you understand, navigate, and resolve all your tax-related issues. Now, let's get started with the show.
Hi, I'm Alan Rolnick. I'm the host of the Tax Resolution Ninja Show, where I feature top leaders who help people with major life events, such as accounting and bookkeeping issues, conflict resolution problems, immigration settling, underinsurance funding, divorce problems, health issues, losing a job, sales and marketing issues, and much, much more. This episode is brought to you by Tri-State Tax Resolution. Have you received a letter from the IRS and or the State Department of Taxation? Don't panic. You need to call the Tax Emergency Room of Tri-State Tax Resolution. That's 718-841-7317. If you know that you have not filed past tax returns and you owe back taxes, the Tax Emergency Room of Tri-State Tax Resolution at 718-841-7317, or visit our website at www.tristatetaxresolution.com and ask to speak to me, Alan Rolnick. I personally will see to it that your tax problem will be permanently resolved. The benefit to you is that a tax lien may not be filed. There will be no more sleepless nights, no levy on your wages. Your assets will not be seized. Your passport will not be suspended. And your employer will never know that you have a tax problem. You will keep your dog, children, and mother-in-law in the process. Our emergency room is now open to help you. Call immediately at 718-841-7317 or visit our website at www.tristatetaxresolution.com. And we will send you a free copy of our book, Solve Your Tax Problem Now, when you schedule an appointment. I have here with me now Adam Pearson. He's the principal owner of Net Income Pros, and they help people with their bookkeeping and accounting needs. Hi, Adam. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me. You know, I'm not an expert on the tax code, but can the IRS take your dog? Is that something they can take from you?
I don't know. You know, I haven't heard a case where they've tried, but you know, it's the government.
They're kind of understaffed at the moment, you know, so maybe you have like rogue agents coming by people's houses and just picking up their dogs.
Who knows? You know,
it's a lack of oversight. Yeah. Well, you mentioned the company, and I just will tell you what we do just to clarify. Sure. And it might be a jumping off point for some person to talk about as well. So great. We only help companies with at least $2 million a year in revenue. And we do a full service accounting department for businesses. So instead of hiring a full-time in-house bookkeeper or accountant, if you hire us, we'll put like 5 or 6 people on the case. So you get bookkeeper, payroll, sales tax specialist, client service representatives to interact with your clients as if they were an integral part of your accounting department, fractional controller, and also software specialist to make your systems work together. And we do that for less than the price of a full-time in-house employee. So that's the business model, and that's what we do. So I thought I'd just clarify that. Hope you don't mind.
You had spoken a little bit before about your going national, that your company is national. So you have the facility to handle sales tax, say,
so much. I don't know how it is with tax resolution, but so much stuff is virtual now that it didn't really make sense for us to limit ourselves to one locality. I would imagine similar to you. Do you help people all over the country, or you just localized right there in New York City?
I help people all over the country. States I may need some help with, because I can't be familiar with the laws of 50 states, but I have colleagues, you know, in different parts of the country that I can tap into when needed.
Yeah, one of the things we started doing as well is we hire all over the country now. So, you know, we got employees in Virginia, North Carolina, Nevada, Florida. Oh. And, you know, one of the good things about the world that we're living in is you can get the best experts like wherever they are. So if you need a great tax resolution expert, you're not really limited to just someone who's in your neighborhood. Same with things like education and stuff. You can hear lectures by the best professors online. You don't have to just settle for whoever's at your, you know, your local community college.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, unfortunately we were with COVID, we were put in that position, but you know, I guess it's a benefit.
I think so. I mean, I'm glad I know you now, because we have tons of business owner clients who, some, you know, entrepreneurs especially, they push a lot of stuff under the rug to just kind of keep their business going. And it's pretty common for them to end up not filing tax returns for a couple of years or whatever, just because they've been so focused on growing their business. So I'm glad I know about you now, because I can recommend people to you.
It's great.
Yeah.
And I would appreciate that. Thank you.
Oh, I will do that. I will definitely do that.
Thank you. Let me ask you a question. It has nothing to do with it, with anything. I noticed on the LinkedIn site that you majored in Spanish as well as business and accounting.
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. No. I remember now. So I got undergrad. I was a double major, Spanish and business, and I got a master's of science in accounting. I was also an enrolled agent before.
Where were you?
But I didn't really like working in taxes, so I relinquished it. I wasn't doing the continuing education.
Right.
In order to get a bachelor of science in business, I had to take calculus. And I was doing all right in calculus, but the teacher was miserable and I just could not stand him.
Oh.
And so I dropped calculus. And since I didn't take that class, I had to go for a Bachelor of Arts. And if you went for a Bachelor of Arts in business administration, they made you double major.
Really?
And yeah. And my dad at the time was doing business in South America, in Peru.
Uh-huh.
And so it looked like I was going to go down and live in Peru for a while, which I did briefly. And so it seemed like it would make sense for me to be good at Spanish. And, you know, the good thing about studying Spanish is you also get a history of Spanish culture. And that served me as well. I ended up marrying a Peruvian woman. Uh-huh. We speak Spanish in our house primarily. And I got three kids. And all of their first language is Spanish. So it actually ended up being a great thing. It worked out pretty well.
That's great. Well,
you don't speak any other languages?
No.
It's not too late, Alan. You can still learn.
My dad was fluent in Yiddish.
Oh, that's cool.
But he never spoke to my sister or myself in Yiddish. It was I was able to pick up some of the language because I would overhear him talking to other people. But as far as we were concerned, nah.
But there's a decent community of people who speak Yiddish there in New York City, right? Do you have clients who speak Yiddish, like Orthodox Jews?
I didn't get the question.
Oh, well, there's a decent size population of people who speak Yiddish in New York City.
Yeah, there is. Not as much as there used to be, but there is a sizable population that still does.
Would it help you in business to be able to speak Yiddish? Could you send out marketing flyers in Yiddish to Brooklyn or whatever?
I guess so.
Yeah.
You know, I never really thought about it. Most of the people who do speak also speak English. So
yeah.
You know,
what is Yiddish? Is it a German? I think it's from German.
Well, it's a combination of things. You know, sometimes it picked up some of the words in the language of the country that the people were living in.
Uh-huh.
But it's sort of Germanic. I mean, it's.
I think it is Germanic, right?
Just because you can speak one doesn't necessarily mean you can speak the other. I know my mother-in-law, because they spoke Yiddish in her house, she took German in high school and had a rough time with it.
Oh yeah. You know, well, so, I guess they say German is. Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
While some of it may have been transferable. Not enough to be able to make learning German any easier.
But yeah,
some stuff that you know that words are similar.
Gotcha. Well, I can tell you, I really cherish the fact that I'm able to speak Spanish. It's always funny to catch a Mexican or a Spanish speaker at the grocery store, and then I start talking to them in Spanish because I'm kind of like the last person in the world they would expect to be able to hold a conversation and. Having spoken Spanish primarily in our household I've been married for 16 years. I'm pretty good at Spanish. So, and it's interesting to see how the different languages have their different strengths and weaknesses. Like some stuff is just better said in Spanish and it doesn't translate well in English and vice versa.
It's the same thing. It's the same thing in Yiddish. You know, you can't say what you get in Yiddish, it doesn't translate well to English.
Yeah. You got to find a workaround, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's the same sort of deal.
Yeah. So are you going to keep asking me questions or should I ask you some questions? You go ahead.
It's however this works, I have no idea.
Okay. All right. Hit me with another question. And then I got some questions for you
as well. We'll figure it out along the way.
Okay. All right. Okay.
So I also noticed in reading the LinkedIn, your LinkedIn page, why did you choose NetSuite over QuickBooks or was Xero?
Well, we prefer I prefer QuickBooks Online to everything. So we do work, some limited work in NetSuite and some limited work in Xero.
Okay.
But I have not worked with a single client from 2 million a year to our, you know, we have about 140 clients, and the average company is with $2 million to $20 million, $20 million a year in revenue. And I have not found a single circumstance where QuickBooks Online was not the best option.
Okay.
We're not a NetSuite company. I've tried NetSuite, and the times that I've been working in NetSuite, I have made a strong recommendation to go to QuickBooks Online.
Okay.
How do you feel about it?
I never learned NetSuite. I never learned Xero. I've been doing QuickBooks since their inception. And you know, I think within the last, 3-4 years, I switched to QuickBooks Online. I don't know. I'm not so sure. I favor the desktop over the online. I'm still in between.
I'm going to go ahead and take a strong stance on this one. I think QuickBooks Online is far superior to desktop. Maybe not as a piece of software, but just for the fact that the access of your financial data is so much easier. If you've got QuickBooks desktop installed, even on a virtual machine, or I mean, especially if it's on a local machine in an office,
right,
it's insane to get access to it. You have to remote in, you have to buy a multi-user license. I mean, just for the ease of access, online's better. And for doing accounting work, the fact that you can open up tabs in a web browser and look at a bunch of different screens, I find it so much better than having to have tiled windows inside of a desktop square. I find it to be so much better for the owner to access their data, and also for accountants actually trying to solve accounting issues.
You have trouble generating reports in the online?
Well, no, I don't. No, we don't really have any trouble. I mean, so the part where online is weaker, but I think it's not a big deal, is there's a lot less customization that you can do
right
in online. I mean, desktop allows for quite a lot more customization in terms of custom fields and custom reporting, but almost nobody uses the custom stuff. It's very rare that a business owner is actually taking advantage of the full range of options in desktop. And when you just talk about the practical benefits of using QuickBooks Online, I think the practical benefits far outweigh your ability to do customization in QuickBooks desktop.
Well, the one benefit that I have is that I can take it anywhere with me. Your desktop, you have to install it on this computer, you have to install it.
I mean, that's it. Yeah. That's exactly right. And when you're talking about things like accountant's copies, you have to actually send a copy to a person
right,
and then not edit it, you know? Right. Whereas online, you give them accountants access and they could just go in there and check it out when they need it.
Now, do your clients download the information for you, or do you do that for them, or?
Which information are you referring to in particular?
The bank accounts.
We have to get access to all of that. We require that they give us access to all of it. So, I mean, for us, we're basically acting as the accounting department.
Okay.
So we need all the stuff that you would give an in-house accountant.
Okay.
And that, you know, that lets us just automate everything and do everything for you. And then business owners don't really have to think about it. I'm sure you know from doing taxes for people. I mean, waiting for people to get you their stuff is the number one key stressful thing.
Right.
And it's stressful for them. It's stressful for your clients too.
Absolutely.
To have to accumulate paper. So we won't work with people unless they give us access to everything.
Okay.
Because it's we'll do a bad job and they'll be unhappy with us.
Right.
Because things will get behind.
I noticed that sometimes the automatic with a program automatically posts the information. You'll post it to the account. Sometimes it's never is. You know, they screw it up. It gets screwed up.
You have to be really careful.
Yeah, I mean, you really got to go through it, you know, to make sure everything's posted the way.
And we do. I mean, so all of our engagement, we do accrual basis accounting.
Okay.
Right. So we can't just set up bank feed rules and just hit, you know, post, but like it has to be more, at least in our case, it has to be more sophisticated than that. Okay. And, you know, one thing looking at the QuickBooks Online algorithm, I don't think we're very close to having artificial intelligence be able to do accounting. It doesn't seem like that's very close at all.
Right.
Because QuickBooks Online has machine learning and artificial intelligence, you know, making recommendations, GL code recommendations,
right.
And they suck.
Yeah.
Like they're not even close.
Yeah. I mean, I know when I do books for a client that I've got to go. I actually have to go through everything, you know, to make sure that they're getting posted to where it needs to be posted. Even though theoretically the computer should know where we posted prior transactions. Sometimes it just puts it in the wrong place.
It's highly likely that Intuit, which is the giant of accounting software, it's highly likely that they have the most powerful artificial intelligence and machine learning algorithms being applied to accounting of any company in the world, and yet they can't choose transactions correctly. So that would lead, and they have a lot of data points for the machines to be learning off of, because so many companies use QuickBooks for accounting, and even so, their machines can't choose transactions well. So I think accountants are safe. I was a little bit worried that artificial intelligence was just going to completely wipe out the entire profession, but I don't think that's the case. I do not think that is the case. I don't know if you have an opinion on it. I don't think machines can learn how to do taxes because the tax code changes all the time.
There are programs where you can't do it with corporate returns, but for personal returns, there are programs out there where if I feed, you know, I scan the information from the client and it will post it to the, it'll post the information to the tax, directly to the tax return. But even there, you got to be careful because sometimes they put it in the wrong pew. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there are duplicates, which this particular program that I'm using is called Gruntworks. Sometimes they will be able to pick out duplications of information.
That's good.
You know, so that helps a lot. But there are certain things that it can't do yet. It does pretty good on the income side, but as far as the deductions is concerned, they haven't solved that.
Well, I mean, even in something like TurboTax, which I think is a very, you know, very...
Don't talk to me about TurboTax.
But I think, you know, I think for your regular, just kind of regular Joe walking around on the street wanting to do their taxes, it's about as, for my own opinion, I think it's about as good as it could be for what it's supposed to be. But even so, when you're running through the interview, I mean, there's just a bunch of questions that a regular person does not know how to answer.
Yeah.
What do you like about TurboTax? How come you don't like it?
They put things in places that are not beneficial, necessarily beneficial to the to the taxpayer.
You think they make it unnecessarily complex?
I think at times, because there are certain things you can't do unless you do the prior thing. But as far as the tax return is concerned, you really need to do the prior thing that they want you to do. So. Yeah. I mean, it's debatable, but I've found that I had a client who sold her business a couple of years back, and I used TurboTax to double check myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's interesting. All right.
Yeah, because you know you can make mistakes. I'm a single.
Well,
So I need something that I could do that will help me compare the two versions. So I input it through my professional tax software.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I got I think it was in the capital gains. And I inputted it. They gave me whatever the number should be. I tried to do it I did it in TurboTax, and the numbers wound up in different places.
Hmm.
So I can't say that TurboTax was wrong in doing it, but they can't. They didn't put it in the place where it was more beneficial for the taxpayer.
Yeah. I will point out another. Yeah, yeah. Please go ahead.
Yeah, and so to try to get it to where it was supposed to go, where I thought it was supposed to go, was just nearly impossible.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's how it goes. But I think for what it is, I would say generally, I think Intuit makes quite excellent software overall. Their customer service stinks, but I think overall they make quite user-friendly, quite good software. If you take into account what it's supposed to be, which is basically taking something that's kind of complex and making it easier, I think they do that very well.
Well, like I said, I use Lacerte, which is also an Intuit.
Yeah, Intuit, yeah.
Product. And I find that to be pretty good. They're expensive, but they're decent.
You know, yeah, yeah.
You don't find what I like is that they give you diagnostics, and you know, if you left something out or something doesn't seem to be right,
the program tells you. That's helpful. One of the other things I learned from using TurboTax is, you know, they got that audit defense thing you can sign up for.
Yeah, but like, if you send it to me, I'll do the audit.
What's that?
I said, if you send it to me, I'll do the audit.
But here's the interesting thing that I kind of worked backwards into. So I think they do the audit defense for like $60 or something like that.
Yeah.
Something.
I don't know what kind of help you're going to get for $60.
I don't know. But the thing I was thinking about is, I wonder what an engagement like that costs them if you actually do get audited. It's probably in the thousands of dollars.
Well, you figure, I mean, if you hired a CPA or an EA to do the audit, you got to figure your minimum, depending on what kind of an audit it is. I mean, a business audit probably could cost them as much as $5,000.
Yeah. All right. So if you use $5,000 as the number, right? They're charging you basically an insurance premium of $60 against a potential payout of $5,000. So right. I think what, $50 is 1% of $5,000.
Yeah.
And they got to make a profit on that.
Right.
So, you know, they're betting that only, you know, somewhere substantially less than 1% right. of any tax right. returns are going to be audited.
That's exactly right.
That's what it has to be in order for them to make money on that service. So
it doesn't work otherwise. The model doesn't work otherwise.
You know, yeah.
There are so few real, you know, real audits like they used to be that.
What's the cause of that? Are they just understaffed or?
Understaffed. They have the IRS has the equipment, even though it's, even then what they have is sort of outdated, but they've gotten better at matching 1099s and W-2s with the tax returns.
So if all that checks out, then you probably won't get audited.
Right. Right. I mean, they'll send you a letter saying you left out this W-2, you left out this 1099. Mm-hmm. Where is it? And, they don't need so many auditors to go out into the field, you know, which obviously saves them money. You know, on something like that, I think the percentage is that they get like $7 in taxes for every dollar it costs them to do it.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's pretty high. It's a pretty high ratio.
That's a pretty good ROI, huh?
Yeah, it's a pretty high ratio.
So I'm surprised they don't do that more. The way it works right now, it turns out that way.
We're going to see more of it. More letters are going to start to come. The matching is better.
But do you think there will be more actual audits or just more letters?
I think more letters. I don't know if they're actually going to be more field audits or not.
I mean, what I like about those letters, what I really kind of appreciate about having to resolve letters, I mean, I don't do that much of it anymore. We usually work with a CPA to resolve letters.
Right.
But you get a lot of time to respond. I mean, you can really drag that thing out for a while.
But then there's the other side of the coin is that they think you're dragging it out. They're going to come after, they're going to slap you like you've never been hit before.
But you know, if you comply, it's still just the natural flow of having to do a lot of stuff through the mail kind of gives you some time to work stuff out. Or at least that's my perception. You're more of an expert than I am.
They're getting a lot of stuff. You can, a lot of the things that are happening, you can deal with them over the phone or before COVID happened, you could settle stuff over the phone. And even to some extent, you can do that now. But in terms of stuff going in the mail, I think you're going to see that at least stuff going from the our side of the situation to them is going to become more electronic rather than sending stuff through the mail. And
I
think that's
ahead. I want to ask you a couple of things, man. So what made you decide to do this podcast, and also what made you decide to write that book? Are you really starting to try to push the marketing and just keep growing your business?
I'm just pushing. The podcast came about. I was listening to somebody else doing an interview with somebody who does podcasts, and I said to myself, you know, and I belong to groups where they're encouraging us to do this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've never been one to put myself out like that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's how it counts.
So this is...
Accounts are very cerebral.
Yeah.
Accounts are more cerebral.
This is really off my radar or out of my comfort zone. I mean, this is...
But have you been enjoying it?
When I do it, I'm fine. You know, but sitting and waiting to do it... said, what am I, nuts? You know, but cool. it's working out. It gets easier for everyone that I do.
I've put together a sales course for accountants. I haven't put it out yet, but you know, over the last couple of years, we've been able to grow our business quite a lot. We went from like 3 employees to 20 employees over the last couple of years, and so I have put together a little sales course for accountants, and I could say one thing for sure. With accountants being so cerebral, I could see how the idea of a podcast feels just like a huge waste of time. That was always my...
Well, that was my take at the beginning. What would I be doing this for?
I think that's how a lot of accountants feel about sales activities in general.
Yeah.
Because when you're doing a tax return or you're doing a bank reconciliation, you're like, you're banging stuff out and there's a result at the end. Whereas doing a podcast, it's very intangible. You don't know. It has a long tail. You don't know what's going to happen.
That's exactly right. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if anybody's listening. And I really don't know who's listening or not, or whether it's just out in the ether somewhere. But the groups that I belong to, and one of them is Michael Rosbrook's Raj Strategies. He's out in L.A. And I belong to the mastermind there.
Okay.
And the people that I've met are doing this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and so you figure, well, if they can do it, you know, give it a shot. And so that's what I've done.
But it sounds like you're a growth-minded individual, and you like business. You're interested in business, and you want to get good at be good at business.
I'm a few months away from being 70 years old.
That's great. I mean, it doesn't matter. My dad's 81, and he works a full-time job.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't see unless my brain stops working, I don't see, you know, myself retiring.
It's really a shame. I think it's a cultural mistake that we have. I don't know if it's common everywhere, but in the U.S., that people start thinking about retirement when they're 65. Like, you've got all of this expertise.
Right. Why?
That now won't be in the market. I mean, it's a real shame that people don't just plan on working until they can't work anymore because... Right.
Yeah, and some people may not want to work anymore.
You're spending stuff out, and you know a bunch of stuff, and they're going to walk away from it.
Yeah. And some people may not want to work anymore, which is fine, you know. But a lot of us, it's, you know, when we hit our mid 60s, even into our 70s, you know, still raring to go. And
for sure.
And you know, so that's what.
Well, and the good thing about being in those masterminds is they force you to keep growing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, because you know stuff that I'm hearing being done now, 30, 40 years ago. Would have never. You got to be kidding me, you know.
No.
But
what would have been the equivalent of a podcast like 40 years ago? I guess a newsletter or something with printed interviews.
Yeah, or you had a radio show on a small station.
Radio, yeah, maybe like a public access radio station.
Right.
Well, so the one thing I talk about quite a bit in this sales course that I put together, because I'm just as cerebral as any other accountant, and when we decided to try to grow our business, since I'm one of the, you know, I'm the owner of the company, I was the guy who had to go out and sell and get more clients. And you know, one of the key lessons I learned from doing a lot of selling over the last couple of years is that selling has a long tail. It has a long tail. You can do stuff today that doesn't pay off until 6 months from now.
Right.
And you just have to be okay with that. It's not like other work. It's not like accounting work. It's not like being a cook in a kitchen where you make an omelet, and you serve it up, and you get to see the results right away. Mm-hmm. It's you have to more block out time and work on it during that time without the expectations of any results during that time period.
Yeah.
Because at some point, I don't know, are you putting this up on a website or are you just putting it up on iTunes?
This will be on my website. It's also on Apple Podcast.
Yeah.
Stitcher and Spotify.
So for sure, at some point, somebody's going to Google tax resolution or whatever. And they're going to come across the tax, you know, they're going to come across the tax resolution podcast, and they're going to start listening, and then they're going to hire you.
I hope so. And also, I have a YouTube channel, so
it's going to happen. You know, we'll see, it might take a while.
We'll see how it goes.
But you know, you only have to do it once. You know, you record this podcast once, and then it just lives online forever.
That's right. It's there forever. You know, as long as there's this podcast,
And YouTube's not going anywhere, so your videos will be up there. But I can tell you a story similar to this. And how long are we supposed to go? A half an hour or 45 minutes?
Okay. It's my choice.
Okay, so I can just tell you a story along these lines. The very first thing I did when we went out and started selling was I printed up flyers, just old school. And I was selling door to door. I went out because we were in a business park, so I figured, like, I'll just talk to the people in the business park, and that worked really well. But I used to carry around these flyers with me in my car everywhere I went. And if I talked to someone I thought was interesting, I'd run to my car and give them a flyer. So I did that. And then at some point, a dermatologist called me. And he said, hey, we need bookkeeping help. And I said, how'd you find me? He said, I got this flyer. I said, where'd you get the flyer? He says, I have no idea. It's just in my office. I think I gave somebody the flyer right before they were going to go to a dermatology appointment.
Right. And they left
it. And they set it down.
Yeah.
And then somebody who was cleaning up the area was like, hey, I found this and gave it to the owner, and he just kept it on file. And then he called me like months later.
Yeah.
So that kind of stuff happens.
It does. It does. So.
And how has LinkedIn been for you? Do you get on there and do stuff? Do you post content? And are you active?
I'm on there all the time.
Okay. Have you been able to get any clients from it?
I get a lot of inquiries.
Okay. So, oh, that's good.
I think that's just the way LinkedIn works. Sometimes you hit it. Sometimes you don't.
Yeah. I mean, the most success I've ever had on LinkedIn is actually just spamming people.
Yeah.
And I mean, and just saying, hey, you need accounting? No. Hey, you need accounting? No. And once in a while, somebody will say yes. And I actually have gotten business off LinkedIn doing that, but I've never gotten an inquiry.
And sometimes you run into somebody, but you know, generally it's just so I think it's networking like it's supposed to be.
And, yeah, I think you're right.
And if something good happens out of it, that's great. And if it doesn't, it doesn't, but it gets your name out. It certainly gets your name out there.
I think you're right. I think thinking about it in terms of networking is the way to go.
Yeah.
And it certainly is a lot more efficient than having to drive to a Chamber of Commerce meeting or something like that and hang around.
Absolutely. I think that doing this stuff virtually has made life a lot easier because you can go to two meetings a week, three meetings.
For sure. Yeah.
You know, and so you're if you're here one day and there another day, you know, it helps.
That's definitely a huge strength. I mean, you do miss out a little bit on the human energy. You start getting around other people, and you know, I think we're hardwired to be social, to be social animals. Mm-hmm. Even if you're a real cerebral introvert, how most accountants are.
Yeah.
It's still nice to just, like, I'm naturally pretty introverted, but one thing I like to do is just go sit at a mall and drink coffee and read and people watch.
Right.
You know, I don't actually talk to anybody, but I'm still around people.
Right.
Yeah. Because it's just nice to have that. So that's one thing that's missing. But you're right. Everything is so much more efficient online.
It is. And I don't know if we're ever going to get back to in-office meetings or anything like that. I think it's going to be a very long time if it ever happens.
I think you're right. You know, it's such a big, huge waste of time to drive to an office.
Yeah.
I mean, you burn out 2 hours a day driving into your office. It's ridiculous.
Ridiculous. And I think the real estate, the commercial real estate market is going to go down the sewer.
I think so. So I wonder what they're going to do with all that commercial real estate, convert it to residential.
They need housing.
Yeah.
They need housing. I mean, we got all these people living on the street. Duh.
You're absolutely right. One of the things that always has been very strange to me is how much storage space we have.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we got all these people living on the street.
That's right.
So it's funny that we care more about keeping our junk warm and safe than we do about keeping.
We have enough room to build storage facilities, but no.
Well, and enough resources to pay for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you're already paying $100 a month, why not just convert that into a studio and let someone sleep in it so they don't have to sleep outdoors?
Right, absolutely.
And just incinerate your junk. Just burn it. Well, you're not using it. It's just sitting there. Incinerate your junk and use the same money to give someone a house. It would make a lot more sense. But humans love stuff more than people. So, which is a pretty strange state of affairs, you know?
There are smarter people out there than I am.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They'll figure it out.
No, they won't, but they're not going to figure it out. But we can conjecture.
So I have one last question.
Yeah.
You have a favorite book?
So are we talking fiction or are we talking business books?
What's your favorite
book? I would say my favorite fiction book of all time is Shogun. You ever read Shogun?
No.
Yeah, they made it into a miniseries by James Clavell.
Right.
Great, great book about this samurai called Torinaga. Mm-hmm. And he's trying to become the boss of all Japan, and there's a lot of intrigue. And then my favorite business book of all time is The One Thing by Gary Keller. I don't know if you've ever gotten into that, but that's the premise of that book is you should just choose whatever the thing is that you're the best at in the world, and set up your life and your schedule so you're only doing that for like 4 or 5 hours a day,
right?
And not without distraction. Huh. And that's probably a much easier way to be successful and not burn yourself out.
It's great.
Yeah, what about you?
Favorite book. I'm not much of a reader, but when I was a kid, and I can't remember the name of the book, but I remember the name of the author. The author was John Tunis. And I don't know if he wrote sports fiction books, or I can't remember because it's so long ago. And there was a book about a kid playing baseball. And at that time in my life, I was a real baseball fan. And I just ate the book up thoroughly enjoyed it.
How come you don't like to read too much?
I don't know. Just the way I am, I guess.
You know, I have found so many numbers people, numbers and laws people that don't like reading.
Yeah.
It's very common.
I don't know if I don't have the patience for it.
Have you tried getting into audiobooks at all?
Yeah, and I must be into like 3 or 4 of them right now I've started, but really haven't gone through. Though what I try to do is that at night when I go to sleep, I put an audiobook on, and I miss half the book. But
it's better than that. But maybe it's working its way into your subconscious, you know?
Who knows? I don't know. I know. I've read the Constitution. I don't remember. Constitution by, can't remember the name of the author. He wrote that, John Adams. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I forget. Yeah. I know who you're talking about. He wrote a bunch of books about presidents.
Yeah, and I think he wrote also 1776.
Yeah. I know who you're talking. I don't know the name, but I know the books.
Yeah. So
he also wrote one about Benjamin Franklin as well.
Yeah. Well, Walter Isaacson wrote Benjamin Franklin, which I haven't gotten to yet.
I read that. Yeah. I read that. That's my dad gave that to me. That's a very good read.
You know, so I'm interested in early American history.
It's fascinating, I think I'm not very very political person. You know, I probably lean libertarian, but there's a lot of lessons from early American history that would serve us well. Just because stuff is old doesn't mean it's not good anymore.
That's right. And I think many of our founding fathers would be turning over in their graves if they saw what was going on today.
Well, I think what is lost on so many people is that the thing that made America great was freedom. You know, this is my own opinion, you know, if there's something that everybody should be rallying around, this is my own opinion, but black, white, when people come here from other countries, immigrants, they come here, they call this the land of opportunity. The reason why they call that is because anybody is supposed to be able to be anything here. That's what the deal is. That's why people come over here, because they're looking for a better life.
Right.
And so that, that should be a uniting thing. Like, let's make this country the freest in the world, regardless of race, regardless of age, regardless of anything. You should have your rights, and you should be able to chase your dreams up in this country. That seems like it should be the rallying call, but it's not like that at all. It's way different now.
Yeah, it's totally different when I was growing up, I'm not so sure it's for the better.
I think it's for the worse, unfortunately. Yeah. Hey, I got another call coming up in 2 minutes.
Great.
So now I do need to jump off.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate the time that you've taken.
Thank you for reaching out to me, Al. I mean, I really enjoyed speaking with you. It was really nice to meet you.
I hope we can do this again.
Oh, invite me again. I'll do it again.
Okay. Take care.
I'll be a regular guest.
Great. Thanks.
All right. Thank Have you. A good one. Have All right. Good. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Tax Resolution Ninja Show. Be sure to click subscribe to get updates on our latest episodes.